Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to season 3 of the Unchained Podcast, where we inspire ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Look, I know it's been a while since we've aired. However, I'm super excited we're back, and I'm here to bring fresh new material from those who are excellent at what they do. Season 3 features a list of individuals from all backgrounds who are rising stars in their line of work and their industry. You're not only going to get some inspiring stories to help you change your life, you're going to get ideas as to how you can become unchained and break away from ordinary. Tune in every Monday at 8 a.m. for new episodes at anchor.fm/unchained. That's anchor.fm/unchained. And get inspired on your favorite platforms such as Spotify, Apple, Google, or even Amazon Music, plus many more. Thank you for joining us. And always, as always, break away from ordinary. Catch you later, y'all.
Hey, what is up, y'all? Welcome to another week on the Unchained Podcast. Man, I got my guy Seneca. He is somebody else that I met at the Great American Speak Off. Phenomenal cat. I think my first interaction with Seneca, I think he caught me on my zone. That was the first time I saw you, spoke to you. And I'm not going to say it was... I can't really say it was weird, but I guess I had an energy on me that was, I guess it was prevalent to a lot of people. I guess they saw it, you saw it. But I think that room though, man, everything that we're doing that weekend, there was a lot of energy in that place, period. Anyway, I think I was getting into, just the whole spirit of the weekend, man, at the Great American Speak Off. There was a lot of energy there. You know, and one of the things that, you know, I remember, like I said, I remember you initially because you spoke to me at first. And, you know, I was like, yo, I feel your energy, you know. And the funny thing was is that I kind of felt you had some of that same energy, like just in your zone, in your space, you know, really getting in tune with, you know, what you're about to speak, what you're about to do. I think a lot of it was, I think the most pressure for some people, I think we had that realization that, that what we were saying in that weekend, it wasn't just about saying something for the weekend, that the fact that it was going to be on TV could potentially change somebody's lives, you know. But when you were on stage in the final 10, you know, you said something, and this is the whole reason why I invited you in the first place. But you made this correlation between you going to prison and the fact that you had this mirror moment. And you talked about you passing out, hitting your head on the floor. And then you kind of, you know, you expanded from that. And you said, we all have these mirror moments. So I kind of wanted to get you on here so you could tell more people about this mirror moment. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I think with what we see today, most of the time, I think a lot of people see, they have that mirror moment, but I think a lot of people turn their head. You know, they don't like what they see, and they don't want to actually they don't want to dig in that space, afraid of what they might find, if you will. You know, so what made you own up to that moment?
Man, so definitely appreciate the question. And then, you know, just to affirm you, your energy was dope down there, and there was a lot of dope energy. As it relates to the mirror moment, man, yeah, it can be scary because. Unlike like dealing with somebody else, like you know yourself on a level that nobody else can ever know you. You know, like your wife, your mother, your father, like you have these thoughts that are so intertwined in you. So when you have that moment, it's so real, you can't escape it. And that can be very intimidating. How I was able to step into my mirror moment was I had several mirror moments before that I did not step into. Like, that's the thing. And my first mirror moment when I was like, I'm going to say 17, and I really just started hustling pretty strong. And I remember we had a house, me and my cousins, and we was going to go out. So I go back in the house to grab something, right? And I use the restroom. And as I'm coming out of the restroom, I just turn around and I caught myself in the mirror. Eyes red, I was high, you know, had a little jewelry on. And in that split second, I looked at myself and I was like, this isn't you. You know what I'm saying? Like just that split second of like, this isn't you. And that small little split second when I said that, the reality of that truth was so scary that I end up subconsciously just putting on like another mask. Now, I couldn't articulate that back then, but that's what I was doing. And I put on another mask, man, because what you're speaking about now. And it took several years of hurt, pain, leveling up to finally come to that point several years later, going back to prison for the second time because I went to the feds at 19. And then that time that you're speaking about that I spoke about in Miami, I was 26 going back to prison again. And I just caused too much destruction, man, you know, and I had to finally look at myself. And then I also say, really, if I'm really, really, really being honest, how does a person truly step into that mirror moment? I hate to use the word has or have to, but I'm going to use it just for context. There has to be a God factor in it, because left within ourselves, with our ego, our pride, our insecurity, and everything that comes with just the human experience, man, sometimes it can be so tough to overcome that, and the social anxiety and everything that comes with that, that like left within ourselves, man, it would be very difficult. So there's like a heart change. There's a heart change that has to connect with the mental thing that you see. Because if I just see it mentally, it's almost like we're not strong enough sometimes if that thing is so scary to overcome it. So you need like some heart stuff, some spirit stuff going on. And that's an X factor that only God can control. And I was just at that point, man, where God was just like, hey, dude, check this out. Like, it's time. It's time for you to act on this thing that you see, that you've been seeing. So, yeah, man, I tell people, man, it's really the heart change. It's really the emotions that essentially define our greatest evolutions.
Right. So, you know, I would probably, use another question. Because you sound, because I'm not going to say anything yet. I'm going to let you keep going. But would you say that, you know, when you were having this mirror moment, there came a point in time, because if I hear you correctly, there was a point in time where you had this moment where you realized, okay, everything that I'm doing out here in this world is not filling this hole right here. Like, no matter how many masks I put on, no matter how high I get, no matter how many people I sleep with, I'm still unfulfilled. So talk to me about that moment, because, you know, for you to be in the bathroom and have this moment and wham, you know, I know speaking from personal experience, there's a time where, you know, you have this, this rude awakening where like, okay, you know, Keelan, your actions have led you down this path before. And you said you weren't going to go here again. And you said you was through with this, and you already said to yourself that this wasn't going to happen again, and this was not good enough. You already know that the answer is not working, you know. So explain to those who are listening in, you know, like what this looks like when you know for a fact that what you're reaching for in the outside world is not fulfilling this inward void. Explain that in your words, because what I'm starting to see people do more and more is it's starting to get really extreme, like. If a woman feels insecure, now she's messing with her face. If a guy's feeling insecure, he's buying more and more stuff. You get what I'm saying? It's going to an extreme that I don't think I've ever seen before. Or maybe I'm just now catching it. But explain to people now, you know, like what this is like that process, the inward conversations that you're having, you know, where you know this is not filling that hole. Explain to people what that's like, because I think if they hear it, you know, versus being in our own, like you said, being within yourself. And I think sometimes, you know, we have to hear somebody else say it, right? And they're probably tired of hearing me say it. I tell my story as many times as I can. But for those who are new, or you're being new to my audience, explain that to them, man. Like, what's that inward conversation like?
So let me also say, like, in this path, like, I had a mirror moment. But this doesn't mean that I don't have other mirror moments that I'm steady dealing with, right? That I haven't come to, you know, so we're all on this human experience and there's no point of grand arrival. It's continuous. In this specific case, let me let people know that I was on the run, as you know, but I just want to let people know I was on the run, went to Austin, Texas, and had came out of the shower, looking at myself in the mirror, and I had a high profile case going on here in Dallas, and I had been drinking, and I'm sitting here looking at my reflection, and I pass out. And when I pass out, I hit the back of my head on the floor. I get up and I'm bleeding. And no matter how much money had been made, no matter how much cars were bought or whatever it is that I was doing, I had to face the fact that sitting here on the run bleeding was the sum of all of my behavior, right? And I started to mumble these negative, incoherent things, like about how I messed up my life. And there were other people, loved ones that was involved that I knew that was going to face some consequences as well. And it was surreal, man. And in that moment, I'm going to say love, really, because all these other times before I'd been getting in trouble or had these mirror moments, it was always just me, right? But my girlfriend at the time had also been arrested, and she had a young daughter. And I knew that my actions were going to be affecting this other woman who had never been in trouble, was green, and was a very, very good person. I had like a household and a family. And it was really that, you know, it was the God factor. And it was the fact that my actions were causing harm to other people, right? And really, really internalizing what that meant. And it was from that moment that really God started to work on me, man. And also, in addition to that, as we're speaking to other people dealing with their own mirror moments, as far as what happened with me, coming from that, I went into the master bedroom, and I had a trash bag full of money, and I started to count it. And for the first time in my life, man, this money was just pieces of paper. It didn't mean anything, right? I mean, who cares if you got all this money when like your whole life like has been shattered, and you know there's like some real stuff that's coming. And it didn't fill that void from like you were saying earlier, man. It was just like it was Monopoly money. And I tell people it was like a sober mushroom trip, man. You know, you're just looking at yourself, looking at all your BS.
Yeah.
And it was just so real, man. You know, so for individuals out there, man, who are having their own mirror moments, whether it be the woman that you explained or the guy that you're speaking about trying to overcompensate, and you know that this isn't you, right? And you can't seem to detach yourself from these actions or these behaviors that's continuously leading you into your own mental prison, and you don't know how to break away from that. The thing that I would tell an individual, man, is as far left and extreme as this may be for some people, for one, your heart, right, has to be broken enough where you become open and willing, right, to connect to your higher source in some way. And that's just my perspective. Now, your higher source can be a number of different things, right? I myself practice mindfulness and meditation and so forth and so on, and don't necessarily practice a specific religion per se. But there is an intimacy, right? And this is the thing that crosses the threshold between like the social media, superficial, the likes, the cars, you know. This gets a little bit heavy for that demographic and people, even though this demographic really wants and needs it. But the things that come out of our mouths in this particular space is money and status and success, when in reality, we all have this soul work that we need. And kind of in conclusion of this point, because this is the most important part of it, there's an intimacy that's needed in any relationship for it to be truly healthy and fulfilling. So now we're speaking about with God. I can have a relationship with God. I can connect with God. I can say, it's God's plan or whatever the new fad and trend people are talking about in that whole God space, right? You know, people say God did or whatever, right? But there's this intimacy that's needed. And just like if you have a relationship with another person, I can have a relationship all day with somebody. We can get along, we can laugh, but the intimacy is a vulnerability and a letting go of yourself. And that's where the magic happens, where you're like, hey, man, like I really got something. So that's the point that each person really wants to get to. And I encourage each person to strive to get to is, how do I become more intimate with God? And that's just a deep space of vulnerability within yourself.
Right. And I love that you said that, man, because it's been, I really won't say it was recent, but, I was in a, church for like maybe, I want to say like 12, 13 years. Actually, no, 14 years. And of course, I was indoctrinated in such a way where I think it kind of blocked the intimacy for me, and it's in what you're talking about, is referred to in 2 Peter, in the first chapter. And Peter goes on to explain throughout this chapter about how all these virtues we were born with. In other words, we were born perfect and complete. There was nothing that we lack internally. Mentally, spiritually, we have every tool that there is. But he does make the reference that in order to get to this point where you're experiencing all that, he says, you must first get to know God and the Lord Christ yourself. And that's intimacy. That's what you're talking about. You're talking about a level of intimacy where, and I always tell people this way. I was like, when you meet somebody, right, you say like you're in a relationship. When you meet somebody, there's a level of, for one, vulnerability, that's going to be required for the relationship to grow. So both people have to be vulnerable, completely open. The next thing is there's the expectation of honesty, right? So when you're going to God, there's a level of honesty that, you have to have. Otherwise, if you're saying that you're building a relationship with God, but yet, like we talked about earlier, having those masks on, you're not really lying to God at that moment. You're really lying to yourself, And I had this moment throughout my journey where this was, yours was 26. My mirror moment was 28, where it was just me and God and a bunch of negative thoughts and a bottle of pills, because I wanted to take my own life. That was my way out. And it got to the point where I felt like I was so broken and defeated that there was nothing that I was going to be able to do that was going to fix it. Right. I had this this issue with abandonment, bro, and it plagued every relationship I ever had. And so when I found myself being married to, my ex-wife and having a kid, and, it's like I wanted to be like the good husband, the standard that the world says. You know what I mean? I wanted to be that, but I didn't know how to be that, because all of my conditioning, all of my subconscious conditioning was about disrespecting women, about materializing women. It's about being emotionally shut off. My mentors were Biggie, Pac, and all those guys, because I didn't have a dad. So what happens when a person wants to do good, but yet all this stuff is still locked into your DNA? It's still locked into your mindset, right? So this was the hurdle that I had to climb, which brings me to, which ties into the point that you're talking about. You said every person has to have this this broken heart in order to, to connect with God. And I totally agree with that. I want to say it's Psalms 51, where David talks to God and he says, you require a broken and contrite heart, which means that I can't have any more ego or pride in the way, because that's really what's, separating me from you. And in that moment, bro, I'm telling you, I couldn't go to work. I broke my foot. I was playing minor pro ball, broke my foot. So because I broke my foot playing ball, couldn't go back to work. It was a safety hazard. I was separated from my wife at the time, and it was just me in a hotel room with a bottle of pills, bro. And that was my only way out. So when I got ready to do what I thought was the easiest way, I promise you, I heard God say, how are you going to take your life when you don't know who you are? You say you hate yourself and you don't like yourself, but how are you going to do that? You don't even know who you are or what you're capable of doing. You haven't even met you, right? So in that moment, I wasn't in front of a mirror, but it was God showing me that there was something else that I haven't seen, because all I'd seen was what I knew. And I think that's beautiful what you're saying, is because most people are there, but most have that barrier. Like, even when they're by themselves, they're like, no, I can't do this because I don't know how. So they opt for the easy route, which is the money, which is the cars, the sleeping around, It is the clothes. It is the surgeries and all that other stuff. It's now you want to become a different, I don't know, a different gender, a different personality, whatever that might be. It's, you notice that, and you can speak to this, but as we get further and further down that path, it's like the masks get more and more perverted and they get harder to take off. You know what I'm saying? And it's like it really distorts our idea of God. And I wanted to bring this up too, but it doesn't distort our idea of God. It is distorts our idea of ourselves. And I remember when you were speaking on stage and you were being critiqued by Grant Cardone. He said, "I don't know if I could sell this to a crowd because most of my crowd never been to prison." And what flashed in my head at that moment was, "Grant, I love you, but you're wrong about that because most of your crowd is in prison. They're in a mental and emotional prison. Them jokers in bondage. They're actually hiding behind the money you're trying to show them how to make. You know what I mean? Like that's the prison that they're in, that they're now supplementing inner peace for cash." Right? They're, like you said, the paper has no value. What they really want is the very thing that you were teaching. You get what I'm saying? So it's like, that was my only disagreement with what he was saying. I was like, yeah, just about everybody on this planet's in prison, bro. Just about all of them. So, so for the person who says, "Well, how do I get to know God?" And me personally, I've taken my walk with Christ a little bit different. I do it without religion now. It's toxic. I do it without religion because I found that there's an intimacy that you get with God that 9 times out of 10 you can't find in a brick building, and you can't find with doing the rituals and all that other stuff. I mean, the pure intimacy that I believe you're talking about only comes with a consistency of inward conversation, a consistency with prayer and meditation, like you said, mindfulness. There's a consistency that has to be practiced there, so you can really dig deep. And people thought I was crazy for saying this, that when Christ was really speaking about the kingdom of heaven, most people relate that to like this big magnificent place that is above the clouds. And I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but when he spoke of the kingdom of heaven being at hand, he was talking about, yo, it's in here. He said, "Look no farther than your hands. The kingdom of heaven is within you." And so when the people are hearing what we're talking about, what would you say would be the next step for those who are listening where they say, "Well, I don't know God." There's not like you can say to somebody who says, "Well, I don't believe in God." Because we can waste a lot of time and energy trying to change people's minds, right? But what would you say to somebody who's on this spiritual journey trying to find themselves? Because and this is and I didn't know you were going to go here with it, and it's kind of unique that we're having this podcast, because this is something else that I teach as well. But not from my point of view. What is your point of view? How would you teach somebody or tell somebody this is the next step? If you're really trying to figure out who you are as a man, woman, husband, wife, if you're trying to, get grounded into understanding your relationship with God and also trying to figure out who you are, what would you say that next step should be? I know that we have the mirror moments, but let's for sake say, we all got the lights off in the bathroom. What will be our next step?
And as you already know, when we say mirror, when I say mirror, it's metaphorical, and it doesn't have to physically be a mirror, right? Just like we say with the prison. The second thing I'll say is what I've come to believe in my personal walk in life is that it's all perfect. And when I say that it's all perfect, each person on their path, I truly believe is exactly where they need to be. And the
Facts,
first
bro.
thing is just acceptance. I think that and I'm just going to speak freely. In some sectors, whether it be religion or business or finance or whatever, there's this thing of like, you need to be doing more. This is what you should be doing, and so forth and so on. And when in reality, like, I believe that God created, this whole universe and is dope, right? So if God created everything in this very dope, perfect manner, us humans are exactly where we need to be. So important, because this lets some of the pressure off of I need to be doing something different, right? So when we come to that place and we're able to get still and accept that and say that everything that has happened in my life has happened to bring me right to where I am today. So important. And then from there, when we're able to relax and breathe and let go of all that pressure, right? And we come back into a stillness. I wouldn't even say, you know, how do I get to know God? Because that can seem big. I will first say, how can you start to get to know yourself, right? Because we know that these things are connected, self and God, you know. And the first thing that I would tell a person after that is from a street standpoint or business standpoint, I'm gonna do street and then business. So let's say I'm in prison and this dude is, you know, he tough, he wanna do this. It's like, dude, check this out, man. If you not a killer, right? If you not like a killer, like that's okay. The issue is you not being a killer or a bad, tough person and acting as if you are. Like, that's the thing that really gets people in trouble. And the first thing for a dude in the streets is to acknowledge, hey, look, man, I might not be the toughest dude around, and that's okay, but I might be good at hustling, right? And you, whatever that is, like, you embrace that. And that's from like a street thing. From a life, business, human being aspect, one of the most liberating things is looking yourself in the mirror and being like, man, you know what? Maybe I don't have to be this Instagram sensation, right? And letting go of whatever facade that's controlling your life. And then coming back and asking yourself, really, what am I? Really, who am I? Maybe I'm like, just like a good dude that like to talk to a lot of women. Like, I'm just throwing something out, right? Maybe I'm just like a good dude who liked the conversation and company of women. I'm not a super player. I'm not a pimp. I'm not a hustler. I'm not a big dope boy. I'm just a regular old dude, man, who likes to make $100,000, $200,000 a year. Go be that. Like, go be that thing that's really in your heart, right? And start there. Come to terms with whomever you really are. Maybe you're a woman out there, right? And you might not have all of the attributes of like a social media star, whatever it may be. But maybe you're like, you're very good at like, you know, being a good woman or cooking or whatever it may be. Whatever that thing is, man, you know, the thing that makes you feel the most aligned with who you are. You know what that thing is. And what I would encourage people to do, man, is go and be that thing and take ownership of that thing. That's the most liberating thing you can do. So when we talk about prisons and freedom, or talk about getting to know God, it's really looking in the mirror and being like, man, like, who really am I? And it's a vibrational thing. It's not a social label status thing. It's a vibrational thing. And you know what that thing is, because when you do it and when you are that person, you feel the most aligned and joyful. The problem is, whatever that thing is for some people, they feel that it's so small compared to the bigness of the world.
Right.
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 And that's the flaw in it. But what we don't realize is that this thing that we think is so small that makes us feel the most aligned, and makes, you know, maybe it's just being like a good mom to my two children. And she's like, man, that's nothing. Like, I want to be more. But see, what we don't understand is that when we get back into that vibration and that alignment of that thing that makes us feel whole, and we lean into that,
bro, that's how you feel more. That's how you become more whole. That's how you, yeah. I get where you said.
That is where you start. See, you have to. If I were to ask a person, there's a skyscraper over here in downtown, and I say, man, I want to build a new building right here. I want to create a new life for myself. What's the first thing I have to do? I got to tear that building down. got to tear that building down, get all the rubble out of the way, and start to build this beautiful building that I want, this new life for myself. And many of us have this image or this facade or this mask that has been built on through life that we're living that's not truly us due to social conditioning. So getting back into alignment with that frequency, no matter what it is, and you know what it is if you sit down and be still. And from there, man, I know for a fact that God will begin to honor and bless that particular direction. And it will flourish in ways that you could not ever imagine. And once we start doing that and start obeying natural laws, universal laws and tendencies, I feel that God will slowly start to reveal itself to us in many different ways, shapes and sizes. And it's a never ending journey, man. Like, again, there's no point of arrival. Nobody has it all figured out. And the process and the journey is what makes it worth living. And I myself can identify with many of the things that I'm saying because, you know, I lived a lie for a very, very, very long time. I built a facade about who I was and who I was supposed to be. And it wasn't until I started embracing these things that I started to tap into deeper levels of freedom internally, which then had external success. And sometimes life still sucks. I mean, shoot, you know, I still get depressed. I still have low moments. I mean, let's not get it mistaken, you know. But I also know that there's a different, and it's a vibrationally emotional thing of just honoring who you are.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, bro. And there are several interesting points you brought up. And I guess, like, to simplify what you were saying, you know, Seneca was, he was hinting around first and foremost, being gracious, being grateful. There's something that happens in you when you say, you know, when you talk about like the gifts that people have that we think are so small, you know, and the funny thing is, that's the thing that makes people enough, you know, is most people think, well, I got to be X, Y, and Z. And you're telling them that when you start looking at all this stuff on the outside, that's literally what creates the box or the prison that you're in. That's what keeps you, a person, from being whole and happy and complete, is you wanting to be everybody else out here. So that's the first thing he was bringing up, was gratitude, you know, absolute gratitude. And I'll be honest with you, bro, I used to struggle with that one, you know, just being grateful or gracious, or thinking that, you know, I got to be all this out here. But then, again, like I say, you know, growing up without a father, you know, and they tell you this how you should live life, you know, because rappers are liars, bro. Rappers are liars. But you look at them and you see what they got, how they dress, the kind of money, and they think, oh, they tell you what, this is how you're supposed to live. And so anytime you're comparing yourself with what you see out there, is going to always rob you of joy, always. And I think it's beautiful that you tied in gratitude, because that's, you know, I teach a program called Self Mastery 101. And literally, it literally starts with understanding with who I am as a being. I have to understand that I'm not a human. I'm a spirit having a human experience. If I'm a human being trying to have a spiritual experience, then I'm backwards. You know, I'm going to always be living in reverse. That means I'm always going to be trying to find something outside of myself, trying to fulfill an inward void. And I didn't know that was going to be the theme line of what we're talking about. But apparently, you know, God has orchestrated his message to whoever needs to hear it. And I guess there are some people that are listening that are really struggling with, look, I don't know who I am. And anytime you have that statement in your heart, but you don't know how to articulate it, anytime you spend, an extensive amount of time not knowing who you are, it's going to create chaos. It's going to create confusion. And for me personally, that's how I got to dabble. You know, I think every year I was trying to figure out more and more about who I was as a person, who I was as a man. And, you know, when I got into manhood, what's fatherhood like? How's a husband supposed to act? And I didn't have any of these answers. And I think another powerful thing that you said is that we need to dial it back instead of asking, well, you know, how do I get to know God? Is, hey, is understanding, yo, who am I first? You know, as Christ said, the Father and I are one. We're all connected. You know, those things are, you know, we're connected through that source. And I think a lot of people, at least from what I hear in my circles, I don't think a lot of people understand what you're talking about when it, you know, when you talk about there's a vibrational match, you know, or there's a vibration there, like a like if I'm extremely happy, or if I do something that makes me happy, like if it's, you know, apparently Colonel Sanders was really happy frying chicken. You know, some people who were happy cutting grass. You know, for everybody that was there at the Great American Speak Off, we're passionate about helping others. You know, it just comes out in the form of speaking. And it's the thing that makes you more alive. So to kind of, you know, piggyback what you just said, so I think people can understand it, is that you don't have to go out and try to create this new thing. We'll put it this way. You can't create the new thing unless you first let the old thing go, which is your point of the building. You know, and I think that's important, too, that a lot of people try to build these new habits without letting go of a bunch of old ones. They want to put on this new persona without, you know, trying to let go of the old one. And I think that's where a lot of us get lost spiritually, where for me, I was one of those people where, OK, I came from promiscuity, drug dealing, dope dealing, getting high, drinking, pill abuse, doing all that. And then I'm trying to transfer over into the Christian world. But dude, there was a lot of information that I didn't have. So I didn't understand things like my emotions were ruling my behaviors. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand anything about the subconscious mind. I didn't understand any of the lingo that goes on out here. So really, the Christian walk at first, it didn't help me. It just made me feel like I was more and more in prison. Because I felt like I need to praise, like they were praising, clap, like they were clapping, pray, like they were praying. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things that is left off when we're trying to teach people the spiritual walk is authenticity, like being grounded in who you are. I think one of the most powerful things you said is that where every human being is right now, you're meant to be there. Like you're perfect where you are. And it's not that you're stupid or you're condemned to be a bad person, or I mean, just because you're doing certain things, you're not condemned to be that. But I think what you meant is that this is the only understanding you have right now. So you're just perfect as to where you are. And as your wisdom grows, you grow as a person. And so I think when you give your message about, you know, again, the metaphorical mirror that you're talking about, people need to be gracious and grateful about their own gifts, their own talents, their own abilities. When you tell people that, you know, you get to know yourself first, which leads to an intimate relationship with God. I believe that's how you were articulating it. I agree with that 100%. And I think there's something else that we need to uncover. And I didn't know we're going to go here, but I think people need to understand, you know, the importance of the word you use called a vibration. And some people refer back to the law of attraction. You know, some people use the law of manifestation. We know that there's some universal laws that we know that work. But let's break this down a little bit, because this kind of goes back to, you know, the lunch that we had at the round table. And I know you didn't say much. You know, you kind of like me sometimes, you know, you were like a fly on the wall. You observe, you listen. For some reason that day, God was using me to be a teacher. The whole day I was a fly on the wall, but for that particular moment, you know, he used me in a different way. But at that table, there was a vibrational match. And I believe we're all there to have a conversation, you know, and I think we're all chiming in. And I'll be honest with you, I think some of us left better after some of the news we had got, you know, in that weekend. And, you know, we don't know how these things play out. But as we talk about vibration and being on these vibration wavelengths and connecting with other things of or other people, you know, how did you okay, let me rephrase the question this way. What was your first experience when you heard that term vibration? And then in your own definition, explain that to people so they understand what we're talking about as far as being a vibrational match or being on a frequency with thoughts and things of that sort. Because whether or not people, you know, understand it or not, for those of you who are listening, this is a science conversation. This is kind of pivoted into science in some way. So with those people who are listening, Seneca, educate them, because I see a lot of the work you do, which I think is awesome work, being able to get people centered and grounded and you know, and mindfulness. That's something rare because you're great at it. And I see how you talk to people and how you communicate with people. Trust me, I've been watching. So, you know, explain that to people, because this is a tool that most people don't have, bro. And I believe this is why most of us end up going crazy. Explain to people what you do, because this is obviously, this is something that is, it's needed. I don't care if it's family life, business life, home life, personal life. If you don't get some form of what Seneca teaches as it pertains to mindfulness, you're going to have a lot of inward chaos and a lot of inward conflict. And that's partially the reason why you feel like life isn't panning out for you the way that you hope it to. But without further ado, just, you know, explain that to them so they get a gist of what you do and how you do it. I think that's super important, bro.
Yeah, and I definitely appreciate, I want you to know that your camera went off and I can't see.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, just.
So weird, bro. So weird. And it's funny because I can see me and you right now. It's so strange.
Okay, so I can see you now. I can see you now.
Okay.
So yeah. Man, let me it's so funny. Like I'm not gonna do this, but just in this moment, I felt, before I answer that question, a desire to like do a short prayer. Because you know, with these type questions, I want to make sure that I'm speaking from a place of spirit and not head knowledge.
Right.
Because there's a difference between facts and truth, right? This truth has a deeper, it's a feeling, and it's not just information.
Yeah.
And I have been talking to people for a very, very long time. And I used to say when I was in prison, man, like I can, because I did, you know, I did 3 years in the feds, 9 years in TDC. And not all the time, but in general, I can by tell where a dude is, like whenever I'm talking to him, because like I was the bunk, I was the cell that like a young dude come to the unit or come to the dorm. And, you know, he kind of got his head on straight or want to do something different. People like, hey, man, go holler at Seneca. You know, we'll chop it up for a little bit. And hey, man, you know, he'll give me a story about he want to change his life. And he did, you know, but then there's a vibration beyond your words that I can feel to about know where you really, really are. And we are animals. And I can sense, especially if I slow down, but anybody can sense when somebody walks into a room and they're kind of tense or they're kind of joyful or they're kind of sad without them even saying a word. Because if we understand things like energy and quantum physics, we know that there's more happening around us that we cannot see with the eye, right? Than if we put a microscope on it. Like energy is around us the whole time. So spirit and science are really two ends of the same coin. So from a scientific standpoint, it is factual that when you walk into a room, there is energy going all around you that you can't see is happening. And we are conduits of that energy from a scientific standpoint. So this is why somebody, again, comes into a room and they're kind of like, you know, angry inside and tense and don't even say anything. And you feel a certain type of way because that energy has been transformed to you. So that's happening. All right. So we take that and we talk about this vibration and so forth. I'm going to skip over and say that there's a couple of things that are important. A lot of people, I got this from a guy I follow named Ed Milet. A lot of people try to change behavior without first looking at the identity. And that's always a mistake. If you try to change behavior without evaluating the identity, it's always going to be burdensome. But if you look at the identity first and you evaluate the identity first, and ask yourself, is this identity serving me? And if it is serving you, then great. Like you don't have any work to do. But internally, if whatever identity that you hold is no longer serving you, at one point it did, because you wouldn't have taken it on if it didn't, even if that serving was a toxic servitude. But now you're going through your life and you're going through an internal identity crisis where you're like, man, this is the identity that I have, but it's no longer bringing me peace. And if your answer to that question is, this is not bringing me peace, then identity crisis now becomes a very good thing, because now you're troubled. And the best thing you can say is that this isn't serving me anymore. So now you're forced to actually evaluate the identity. And now you start to actually do the work. And this is where we have to start to unlearn. And in order to unlearn, I'm getting to the vibrational pool. Then in order to unlearn, and we all have to unlearn, I'm still unlearning stuff. I encourage each individual that there is a time of detachment that has to take place. Because you are being bombarded with information and data and your own thoughts and identities and who you're supposed to be. And there's a point of detachment that has to take place where you remove yourself physically, metaphorically, mentally, whatever, from this normalcy of this life identity that you have. Because you have to get into a place of quietness. And when you come into this place of quietness and you come into the aspect of this identity is no longer serving me, there is one thing that I have faith in, because I've struggled with, like, you know, like, how do I talk to people that's wrapped up in this and wrapped up in it? Because that's such a heavy, heavy, big thing. Like, how do you go against something that big? And I came to the conclusion that it's very, very easy. For one, I don't try to convince anybody of anything. It's not my job to try to convince right. you of anything. The only thing I'm supposed to do in my particular life is ask, are you at peace? Because I know that's the one thing that trumps everything. Because I've had money. A lot of people may have had women and cars and mansions and this and this and this. But you know if you're at peace or not. And you know that peace is the most important thing you can have. I can do a post on Instagram all day, but are you at peace? And when a person can get still enough to be honest enough with themselves, and if I'm talking to them with me and say, you know what, man, I'm really not at peace in this area of my life. And once you're able to verbally articulate that, you are now opening up the door for God to start to work, right? And whenever you get to that particular place, man, there is an alignment. There's a vibration. There's an inner frequency that goes beyond physical description that no words can ever fully articulate. But when you start to do these things that I'm talking about and come back to yourself, come back to yourself and come back to yourself and really sit there, then let me say with this, I knew what you were saying and I agree with what you were saying about people at the Great American Speak Off, and we were doing this thing because it's what, you know, we felt aligned with. But in reality, this coming back to ourselves, it isn't a thing to do. Finding yourself isn't speaking. Finding yourself isn't real estate. Finding yourself isn't Kentucky Fried Chicken frying chicken. That is a byproduct. That is an action,
an expression. Byproduct,
right? Finding yourself is a quiet place that only you know, right? And you start to unlearn and let go of all these different identities and labels that you have to live up to, right? And oftentimes, whenever you find yourself in that space, there's a natural humility that comes with it. See, I can listen to people, and some people say, "Yeah, I found myself, and you know, I don't care what nobody think about me, and I don't." And there is this, and it's like, I don't know if you quite got it. Because right. when you really, yeah. really, 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 really find this place, man, there is a softening of the heart.
Yeah.
There is a humility of there is a grace. There is a because all the turmoil that you've been through. You know what that feels like. So if somebody else is condemning you about this and this and this, you don't brag or boast, or you see the same hurt in them as you had in yourself, and you hold grace sometimes, and it's a different thing. But I'm so confident in this thing. See, because I have spoke to men who were tatted up from head to toe, gang affiliated, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not no rough, tough guy, man. I'm a real solid, down to earth brother. You know what I'm saying? I ain't trying to facade. I ain't no gangster. Right. Somebody taught me how to do something when I was a young age and hustling. I became good at it and made money. And that ended up putting me in and out of prison. But I had a lot of respect in prison, right? Because of these things that I'm speaking about now. And I can remember times having a celly dude tatted up. You would never think in a million years that this dude had, you know, a soft spot in his heart, whatever it may be. And we on lockdown. And he see me meditate and see how I move. We start having conversations. And about 3 or 4 days into the lockdown, man, we are talking about these things. So I'm so confident in this because I have experienced it with people that you never would think. And I would have enough of these conversations where I know now that it is a universal thing that we all feel and we all want and we all desire. So coming back to that stillness is coming back to that vibration. And it's something that you have to experience. It's something that you have to actually want. It's something that whenever I'm speaking, that some people are like, man, look, I ain't trying to hurt. I'm finna go get some money. And some other people are like, man, that's kind of interesting. I've been feeling that way for a very long time, or whatever it may be. And that's when the journey begins. And this is some God stuff that has to happen.
Right.
So I know that's a very abstract way of explaining what you're speaking about, but the reality of the situation is that when we talk about vibration, we talk about God, we can speak about it, but it is undescribable. And it is something, because emotions are very intelligent, and there's something from an emotional standpoint that we're able to pick up on that I believe every person has the ability to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually, I teach it in a physical way, you know, because if you understand, you know, like you talked about earlier, quantum physics, science and spirit, when you understand those things, you know, you have to understand that beyond what we can see is a whole world of what we cannot see. And if I remember the percentages correctly, you know, 73% of life is unseen. You know, from what I've learned in quantum physics, 73% of everything that is alive and created is not even visible to our eyes. And all of matter, all the created matter that exists, there's only 4% that we see, that we experience through our five senses, right? See, hear, smell, taste, touch. And one of the ways I articulate this, you talk about inward peace. And I always ask people, you know, what is it that you believe about yourself to be true? And for the most part, like you said, everybody has this desire for inner peace. Everybody wants to be loved, liked, or accepted, or respected. But how a person really feels about themselves and what they truly believe about themselves is always evident when I tell them to do this very one thing, right? So I'm gonna get very nerdy here with you right quick. But if you understand the poles in the planet, the magnetic poles in the planet run north to south, right? And if you understand the flow, and this is like from, you know, like a middle school science, if you understand the flow of magnetism, it runs north and there's a pull from the south, and it kind of goes in this continuous loop this way. And so one of the things, or one of the elements in your blood, is what? Iron, which is one of the most magnetic metals that there are, right? So what I often tell people to do is, I say, whip out your cell phone, and I want you to pull up Google Maps, and I want you to turn your phone north. So when you see that red arrow point upward, I want you to face that way. And then what I have them do is we get rid of all distractions. We get the room completely quiet. And I tell them, I want your mind to open up. I want you to let your thoughts run. And I'm going to ask you a question, but I'm not going to say it out loud. This is trippy. You can even try this. And I say, I'm not going to say it out loud, but I'm going to ask you a question in my head, and I'm going to say the word check. And when I say the word check, you're going to feel a magnetic pull forward or backward. So if you agree with what I'm saying, you're going to feel a strong pull forward, meaning that your subconscious mind agrees with what I'm saying. In other words, you're on the same vibrational frequency of what I just said. Now, if your subconscious disagrees with it, then you're going to feel a strong magnetic pull backwards, which means you disagree with what I just said. And you can ask my wife, I did this in her brother's backyard, and I was coaching some men, a group of recovering addicts that I work with. And I had them stand up and do this. And so one of the questions was, or one of the statements was, I said, I love myself. And I said, check. Most of them went backwards, right? Another thing that I said was, I'm giving this all that I got, this program, I'm giving it everything that I have. Some lean forward, some lean backwards. Now, in some cases, a person may remain neutral. But what you were saying is, like when a person walks into the room, you can actually feel the energy from that person. And so you got to think, I was in San Diego. These guys were up here in Oliver Springs, Tennessee. We're 2,000 miles apart. So from what I did in California, their subconscious mind was able to link with mine 2,000 miles away, bro, like that. Okay. So one way that I test what somebody really believes about themselves is we go through that exercise. See, you can tell me what you want to tell me, but we can put your spirit to the test. See, the spirit of God knows all things. And if you can't agree with me about me saying that you love yourself, then that means we got some work to do. What is it that you don't love about yourself? And this is where we have questions. And so they can't necessarily deny the results. You get what I'm saying? So in other words, it's like a lie detector test without the machine. And that's just the way I test their vibrational frequency of a thing. And so for those of you who are listening, what I'm explaining to you is, if you read the Bible, I don't care what you, if you believe in energy, if you believe science, Bible, whatever it is, I like to use Hebrews 11 and 1. It says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, is the evidence of things not seen. And most people think faith is a religion, but that word can also be translated into trust and thought. Nine times out of 10, I use the word thoughts because thoughts are the substance of things hoped for, is the evidence of things not seen. Because faith or thoughts, they're both positive and negative. And whatever a person experiences, positive or negative, is nothing more than a result of their own continuous thinking. And so when I explain that to people and tell them about vibrational match, you said something else about looking at our identity. And so I would furthermore say that looking or examining our identity, we can kind of see a trail or a story that this identity has created. Like you said earlier, you said you were looking at the damage that you made. Bro, when I was willing to take pills to end my life, it was like, for me, the metaphor that I used was like coming outside after a tornado had passed, and I looked at the path of destruction of that I left behind. And so I think, what Seneca's saying and what I'm saying entirely is that if you don't have a good grasp on who you are, you can kind of get an idea of which identity is controlling which parts of your life. Because if we're being honest, some of us have multiple. We can be one way with our spouse, another way at church, another way in front of people. And the whole point is what Seneca's been trying to explain is coming back to yourself, which means you should be single-minded. We shouldn't have all these different identities. And I totally agree that this is an ongoing process. Nobody has arrived. We're not the Gandhi or the Jesus. We have not arrived at that point or that apex where, we're sitting here telling you, the end all be all. But what we are saying is that, we're one of the few, and which is one of the reasons why I'm so drawn to Seneca, is I see a lot of myself in him, again, vibrational matches, is that we are some of the few that that are willing to do the work, you know? And I applaud you, bro, with what you do, because there's nothing greater on this planet than somebody who believes enough in what they do to put it out there to help other people, man. So, yeah, I love your work, bro. Yeah. Seriously.
I want to say, there was something that you said that was fire, dude. And I've said it in different ways, but I like the way that you just articulated this for us. Your identity has left a story. Right. And what I say is that people can tell you whatever they want to tell you, but watch the patterns. Your patterns tell you who you truly are, not what you say. And your identity does leave a story. And for someone, because we know, you know, I mean, everybody's had the time they've been out there in this or out there in that. And out there can be the streets, out there can be trying to make money, out there can be women, whatever your out there is, right? It's a different levels. And I've come to know and believe that is okay. That's right where you're supposed to be if all of this information just sounds like, you know, gibberish to you, or you're probably not even listening. And that's okay. And then for other people going on in our path who want to start to do the work because our heart has been broken, we've hurt other people, and we're not really at peace and we want to be and can't quite figure it out, and you start to get to the point of wanting to do the work, then what he said is, look at the story that your identity has created. And honestly, in your mirror, ask yourself, is this story the story that I want to continue to be told in the future? And if the answer is no, and you're truly in a brokenheartedness place, which is actually beautiful and the best thing that can ever happen to you, then it's important to start to fall in love with the process. Fall in love with the pain. We have been taught to sweep triggers under the rug or avoid our triggers, or being in pain is a bad thing, or setbacks. No, that's where all the beautiful stuff actually happens. So it's reframing all of that and starting to understand that these things are actually some of the best things that's happening in our life. And when you are able to step into that and you see something through, you start to appreciate that journey of being broken and loving the process and looking at the identity and being like, hey, like, I don't do that anymore. And you have ownership of that. And once you feel that, then the adventure now comes, and how many times can I duplicate that in my life, right? And you're going to have some setbacks. You're going to have some setbacks, but keep going. So what I hope to do and what I like to do just as a human being beyond business is create safe space for people to be incomplete, create safe space for people not to have the stuff figured out, and to embrace where we are and to ask, are we at peace? And if we're not at peace, are we willing to start to unlearn some things that are no longer serving us? And don't have to blow it up and exaggerate it and make this big hula thing. No, this is a very, very simple thing that we're talking about. It's actually just coming back home and sitting in the living room talking to your mama. And if we can create that space where it feels that way and it's not this big workshop and lights and cameras, that's where we get the most healing from. And it's from this place that you then can now start to co-author and write your own narrative in a whole different way that goes beyond the social stimuli that's dictating our life decisions now.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. And, you know, it's funny because I feel like this conversation can go on for another hour. You know what I mean?
I know what
But I, yeah, sure. Yeah, but I love the fact that you said that, you know, because, you know, I had a great mentor. His name is Dr. Matt Menino, and I work with him. He's a, you know, neuroscientist, and he was teaching me all these, you know, cool things about, you know, neuroscience. And he was speaking on how when things go wrong in your life, like these pain points, these triggers. He's like, you know, that's your subconscious communicating with you. You know, that you might be experiencing this pain, but it's really just saying, hey, warning. Because the way your mind is designed, your conscious and your subconscious mind both are wired to keep you safe. Where your conscious mind is wired to keep you safe from, you know, just physical harm, like not running out in the street, you know, not doing things that hurt your body, is wired for that kind of safety. But your subconscious mind is wired to keep you safe, even if that means keeping you the same. So even if I want better, even if I want to live my life or, you know, make more money, provide for my wife and kids, whatever that might be, if the way I see myself, if my identity tells me the story that I'm not good enough, even if those are noble aspirations, my subconscious mind will actually self-sabotage what I do to make sure that I stay the same. Why? Because it sees this life as a threat. It's new to me. You get what I'm saying? So, you know, to create that safe space, I think, you know, most people have to be okay with understanding that there's a duality in you. And I think a lot of times it's so trumped up in the church world, like there's an enemy and there's a devil, and, you know, there might be, but I've come to learn that the enemy is within, because there's a duality of thought. And there's part of you that really wants to be better, do better, have more, live more. Nothing wrong with that. But there's also the conditioned part of you that has known nothing but pain and heartbreak. And it's been more of that than the previous. And when your subconscious mind gets a hold that you have these new dreams and these new aspirations, and your outside life is sending you in panic and rupture, like you said, yo, we should celebrate that, because for one, that means, yo, we're at a point where this hurts bad enough to where I want to do something about it. The other part about it is you got to learn to forgive yourself, because these are the moments where we talked about those multiple mirror moments we had where we kept self-sabotaging. This is where you can apply forgiveness. You've come up to this point, accept who you are, accept where you've been, see where you're standing, and still be able to love yourself for it. So how can you get upset with yourself when you don't really know the, you know, when you don't have the information that was going to make a better life for you? But now that you're privy to this information and you don't have to get emotional about it, you know, now you can make a solid decision. And like you just said, you know, let's create more of these same thought processes and experiences. You know, let's get back to this point where I do a deep dive into myself and I have some self-awareness. I have some observance and I figure out where to put my next foot, you know. And I think that's what most people, I think this where they kind of, you know, lose grip on this idea, because they think change has to be right now. The only right now thing that a person can't control is a decision. That's it. When this situation comes up, if you just decide that you're going to do whatever it takes to get better, be better, then guess what? Your mind's going to reward you for that. Well done. Pat yourself on the back. Now let's take the next step. And some of us get so caught up in, yo, bills piling up right now. Things don't look good right now. God, I got to have it now. And we try to rush this process of transformation. And, you know, I tell people all the time that I don't necessarily go by a clock. I don't. You know, the whole point of prayer is to collapse time and space. And so when I'm telling people, explaining this to them, how their mind works, how transformation works, you're going to speed up the process. Like you said, if you take yourself out of this present moment and place yourself in a place where there is no moment, it's just you, and hone in on, like you said, looking at this identity. Has it served me? And what you're really describing is doing the tough work that nobody really wants to do. It's easy, but it's also hard. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. It's easy to sit down and ask yourself these questions, but most people don't want to ask themselves these questions, right? So I'm loving what you're saying, because, and I'm glad that, you know, God kind of led us to do this scientific approach to it, because I think, you know, science, a lot of people have to understand the science of thought and the thought process, because if you just leave it up to me and you just give me words, I'm like, yeah, that's what so-and-so said. And it's not going to hit me in a way. But if I can tell you how this thing actually works, Now I got the aha moment, you know, and that's kind of like how my mentorship was with Dr. Matt. I was like, oh, so this is why when I went to the altar and was praying and was seeking change, I just ended right back up at the church doing the same thing. You see what I'm saying? I wanted
Yeah.
change, but the self-sabotage mechanism sat in. You know what I mean? And so I love that you want to create that, you know, because that's exactly the same line of work that I do, is creating a safe space for people, you know. But I guess for you, like, where can people get in this safe space with you? Like, how can they find you? How can they, you know, get in contact with you for you to lead them to this safe place where they can open up and share, you know, so they can be guided, you know, on the right path.
Yeah, so man, right now as a company, we have a new concept that we're working on right now. I actually just launched it at the Center for Spiritual Living last weekend, and it's a guided meditation that I've put together, and we're actually beta testing that out to several different demographics right now. There are some people that's, you know, shown some interest in it. And basically this meditation that I do is it's called resistance meditation, where I'm creating an environment for people to sit with their triggers, and we work through, you know, some of that trauma to a more peaceful state. But that is something that we're working on as a company with some bigger organizations. As it relates to getting with me personally, I actually just started doing, I got two clients, because I don't know if you're on the group chat from the Miami trip, but I actually never did official coaching. I go speak, I do workshops, but I never really started doing like one-on-one or small group coaching for money or for business. It's just something I've always done. And I went
Right.
to CSM and spoke, and I offered some coaching, and I got a couple clients from that. So that's actually a new thing that I'm embarking on officially. But if anyone wants to get in contact with me in any manner or capacity, from something that's more of a deep dive from a coaching aspect, or just kind of just talk about maybe some things that you're going through or you found of interest, some of the things that I'm speaking about personally. You know, I would just say send me an email. You can also find me on Facebook. I don't have a whole lot of infrastructure up from a business standpoint right now, just because we're like in some rebranding, rebuilding type of stuff. And you know, that's just is what it is. But email address, Facebook is fine. If anyone wants to reach out, my email address, and I don't know if you can put this maybe in a chat or anything, but it's going to be hello. Hello at Khmer. Khmer is an acronym that means keep me in remembrance, Khmir dot life. So that's hello, Hello at Khmir dot life. And Khmer, keep me in remembrance, is the name of my company and my nonprofit, which is a concept that I got from an ayahuasca experience many, many years ago. We didn't even talk about my ayahuasca experiences that I've had, but keep me in remembrance, man. I go by the name Seneca Khmer Alma. Seneca is the name that was given to me, upstate New York, Native American Indian tribe. Khmer Alma is the name that I've given to myself, which essentially Seneca, keep me in remembrance, because Alma is another word for spirit. So when I tell people it's one thing to do something and another thing to become someone, and the Khmer concept that I created is inspiring people to find your own Khmer. What is that thing that you really need or want to be kept in remembrance of to liberate you from your own prison or prisons, right? For me, it's staying in remembrance at all times that I'm spirit. And that's something that is reminded to me every single day, at least I try to. So that's the core principle of really what we teach about at the Khmer Experience, is helping people come back to their center. Because once you do that, the only time that we become lost, confused, afraid, or off track in anything, relationship, business, the only time that's happened is in that moment we have forgotten who we are. Because if you were grounded, confident, and secure, and your wife said something to you that you didn't agree with, and your energy was good and it was at a high vibration, you would say, baby, you know, I don't really agree with that. Like, let's talk about it. But when you're not in that and she says something, oh, you may go off. So yeah. How do we right. stay as close to that vibration as we can as much time in life, so that as the BS happens in life, we're able to look at it through that lens of who we truly are, and we're able to respond and react to life in a higher vibration, which defines our whole existence.
Right, right. Yeah, man, that's beautiful. That's beautiful, man. And, you know, that kind of answered the other question. I was going to ask if you had any closing thoughts, but you just answered it.
Also, you can find me on Facebook, Seneca Kamir Alma on Facebook, or the Kamir Experience on Facebook. That's all I got.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'll make sure I put it in the post with it. So when they see you, man. But yo, man, beautiful talking to you, man. Love your energy, bro. Love it. Love it. But we'll definitely do it again, man. I'll definitely be in touch, man. We share a lot of the same thoughts and ideas, man. I really respect what you do, man.
Dope. Hey, man, I send the same to you, King. I appreciate it.
All right, man. See you, brother.